This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Catch us anywhere on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app on your smartphone. Just go to your app store and download 98.5 The Sports Hub. The stream comes right up. You can stream us live or catch any podcast, any show, hour, segment that you missed will be up immediately. You can catch up on all of it that night, the next night, whatever the case may be. So that's how you get us. We start off Bruins, and we'll do a lot of Bruins throughout the course of the day. Do want to mix in some football, Maz. And we were off last week. I was for all of it. I caught up on some things that happened. And here's something I meant to mention yesterday. I want to flush it out a little bit more today, because I think that I think this deserves to sort of be reconciled. And what I'm trying to say is, remember last year when Malcolm Butler was having contract trouble with the Patriots?
Of course.
You know, and it's, you know, he was going to hold out. He's pissed off about what Stephon Gilmore got. And then what did you hear a lot about with, you know, from the local guys about how Malcolm Butler was handling it? Don't you remember hearing over and over and over again how Malcolm Butler's agent was killing him?
Yep.
How Malcolm Butler's agent was inexperienced. He was some yokel from Alabama who didn't.
He was a real estate guy, I believe.
He sort of did the agent thing on the side, or just started the agent business and was inexperienced and was screwing Malcolm Butler over. Remember how often we had to hear that?
Yes.
Especially from the local guys, about how Malcolm's Butler agent was screwing this up. You all remember it, folks. We talked about Malcolm Butler day in, day out for, you know, months. And it got to the point where Malcolm Butler's agent, who no one had ever heard of before or since, his name is Derek Simpson, where Derek Simpson was just getting hammered by local guys. And I, you know, this frustrates me. This is a personal thing for me, because I've been on both sides of this. I've been on all sides of this. When I covered the Bruins and when I covered the Patriots. I remember when I covered the Bruins. The Bruins would get into a contract dispute with a player, and the next thing you know, they'd pull aside the beat guys like me and start whispering in ear about what a D-bag the agent is and how the agent's screwing everything up and the agent's not serving the client, and they try and undermine the whole process by hammering the agent. And, you know, Harry or Mike would pull me aside and say, this guy's ruining the deal. This guy's not letting this guy play. This guy's bad for his client. This guy's bad for the game. This guy's screwing it up. And I got to the point where I'm like, guys, it's not my responsibility to do your contract. You either want to play the player or you don't. If you don't want to pay the player, then don't pay him. But, you know, it's not my job to go bury the agent on your behalf. Like, I got frustrated with this. And the Patriots would do the same thing. It's sort of textbook. I'm sure the Red Sox did the same thing.
They all do.
So the teams get to the beat guys and say, you know, we love Jackie, but it's Boris. He's screwing the whole thing up. And then all the Red Sox guys go out and hammer.
I got a scoop.
Hammer Scott Boris. You know, just do the team's bidding. And so when I heard all this stuff last year about this agent from Malcolm Butler getting hammered, and all the local guys saying the agent's inexperienced, the agent doesn't know what he's doing, and the agent is getting in the way, and the agent, and I'm like, oh, please. And I just think it's unfair. Most of the time. Because I think you blame the player, not the agent. The agent works for the player, not the other way around.
Yeah, you had the reporter's version of PTSD. It brought you back to your time.
It did. I'm like, I've seen this before. And it's like, if you don't want to pay the guy, then don't pay him. But I'm not going to be a part of your PR campaign to hammer the agent because you're pissed at the agent because he won't take a team-friendly deal. It's not my job to hammer an agent because an agent won't take a team-friendly deal. That's your job. I'm not going to do your job for you. So I heard all the Derek Simpson hammering last year. I'm like, this doesn't. So let's go to the scoreboard. Again, remember last year? Derek Simpson was an idiot for not taking an earlier offer that the Patriots had given him.
It's like $7 million a year, $8 million a year, something like that, I want to say.
According to Jeff Howe of the Boston Herald, who was on this story from day one, he reported last year, last March at this time, that in 2016, the Patriots offered Butler a deal around $6 and $7 million annually.
Well, it's even lower than I thought.
Okay, so but let's just say it's $7 million a year. So to be fully fair, I'll say that the Patriots' offer was $7 million a year that was offered to him in 2016. I assume because it was offered in 2016, it would start in the 2017 season. Okay, and maybe he would get some bonus money in 2016. But the way you look at most deals is the first 3 years of the deal. So when they offered him that deal, and again, Butler's agent was getting hammered for being inexperienced and stupid and screwing this thing up and screwing his client over. Remember this? For turning down the $7 million a year offer in 2016. If he had taken it, so let's just now we know what Butler signed for in Tennessee. Let's see how the agent did, shall we? Let's see if the agent's an inexperienced idiot who killed his client, or if actually he knew what he was doing and got the most for his client. Yeah, but you just tell me. I'm just going to give you the facts, the numbers. So if Butler had signed that deal with the Patriots, he would have made $21 million those the first 3 years of this deal. So let's go the first 3 years, because that's how most deals are judged. 2017, 18, and 19, $17 million. I'm sorry, $7 million a year, $21 million. Okay? Instead, in 2017, he played for a $3.9 million tender. He played on the tender offer for the Patriots. So he made $3.9 for the Patriots in 2017.
Can we just call it four to make it easy?
Sure.
$4 million.
I've done all the math. I'll make it easy for you. So $4 million on the RFA tender for the Patriots this year. In Tennessee, he signed a deal that in the first 2 years, we'll pay him $25 million.
Saw that.
Guaranteed. He got $10 million to sign. He has base salaries of 3.5 and 10.5 in the first 2 years for a total guarantee of $24 million. And then he has roster and workout bonuses for another million to make it 25. I assume he's going to be on the roster and workout. So I'll give him that, but you could even take that away if you want to be totally fair. Either way, what's 25 plus 4?
29.
And what would the Patriots have given him?
21.
Is the agent an inexperienced idiot?
No. In fact, he came out way ahead.
Way ahead. Way ahead. So the next time a local beat guy in any sport for any team tells you the agent doesn't know what he's doing, just know where that's coming from.
It's about 35-40% more.
And the next time, you know, Malcolm Butler's some sort of idiot, what, Malcolm Butler and the agent were some sort of idiots because they wouldn't bend over and get spanked by the Patriots and take a team-friendly deal, so now the player is greedy or the agent's an idiot? Give me a break. Malcolm Butler and his agent played it perfectly. They kicked and screamed. They wanted a new contract. They shopped him around for an RFA offer. It didn't come. They maybe threatened things behind the scene and blew their stack behind the scenes. So what? He showed up for everything. Didn't miss anything until the coach stupidly benched him in the Super Bowl for no good reason that we can think of. And he killed it at the contract table. Killed it.
And even considering his client's year that he had, that was a hell of a gamble, but it paid off.
So that's a good point, Murray. And on top of it, too, and Volan touched on this in the Globe today.
What a great point.
The Super Bowl really didn't hurt him all that much, or if it did, he still came out ahead.
So maybe it did hurt him a little. It still blew the pants off of the Patriots' offer. So, again, let me get this straight. Just because Malcolm Butler and the agent won't take a team-friendly deal, the agent's an idiot and doesn't know what he's doing. God, like, that frustrates me. I'm not angry at the team, necessarily. I get angry at the coverage and that sort of disingenuous game that's played. When you turn around and start hammering an agent. When you don't know Derek Simpson from
Bart.
Bart Simpson, thank you. From O.J. Simpson. From, you know, whoever Simpson.
Jessica.
From Jessica Simpson, thank you.
Trying to give you pop culture.
We don't know a damn thing about Derek Simpson. Don't know a damn thing about him, whether he's good or bad or giving good or bad advice. We only know, if we're talking to the team, that the team is pissed that Malcolm won't take a team-friendly deal. So now the hammering of Simpson starts. It turns out he nailed it. I don't know. Call me crazy. He bettered the Patriots offer by 30-40%, and, to your point, he didn't even have a good year. And he got embarrassingly benched in the Super Bowl. And he still made his money. Much more than he would have signed or had made if he was the good Patriot and signed the deal that the team put in front of him in 2016. So I do think it's fair to go look at the scoreboard and look at how that all played out, because last year we had to sit there and listen for months how Malcolm Butler's agent didn't know what he was doing. Seems like he did pretty well for himself for me. Anyway, I don't know. That's the numbers. What would you rather have? $29 million or $21, Murray? What would you rather have?
I'd rather have that extra $8 million.
Yeah, sort of seems like the agent did pretty well. Call me crazy.
Well, particularly for a guy that was undrafted, to get that extra $8 million, that's no small thing. And I'll tell you what, all things considered, when I saw the deal, I said Butler did well. Again, Gilmore got 4 years and 60.
And 40 guaranteed.
Right. I mean, he got more guaranteed money than Butler. But the contracts
No.
They're not that far apart.
From soup to nuts, Gilmore got 5 and 65. Butler got 5 and 61.
That's right. That's what it was.
And the agent's an idiot because he didn't bend over and get spanked by the Patriots 2 years ago? Please ignore that coverage when you hear it the next time. How the agent's an idiot. Even Boris, who we know sucks. Whenever you hear that, it's coming from the team because they can't sign the player. It's not our job in the media to do the negotiating for the team. You want to get a guy to take a team-friendly deal? Do that on your own time, not mine.
Yeah, my issue with Boris always was that he was deceitful. That's a separate issue. But in this thing, no, Butler did well on this. He did. He came out way better. Again, I compared it to the Gilmore deal. Now, Gilmore got more guaranteed money. You can't ignore that. Right? That's a $10 million difference about. But Butler got reasonably close. I mean, Gilmore was a first-round pick. Butler was undrafted. He did well. He did way better than I thought he was going to do on this market.
And in terms of the Super Bowl hurting him, Mike Vrabel didn't even ask him about it. Wasn't even asked about it. No, wasn't asked about it by Vrabel or the GM there in Tennessee. He wasn't asked about it.
And two former Patriots. Again, John Robinson used to be a scout here. So a further indictment on Bill getting it wrong and benching his ass.
Well, what it tells me is that they know how Bill can be.
So look, I mean, just saying, I'm not ripping here the Patriots for not signing Butler, because they might have been right about him. Like, I thought they should have given Butler the money. I thought they were wrong not to do it, but maybe I was wrong again and they're right, because maybe Butler's not worth that money. He went backwards this year. Again, you can make the case that they poisoned the waters. They didn't get the most out of him because they pissed him off at the contract. But be that as it may, the Patriots might have been right not to give him the money. That's fine. But we got to go on a campaign to bury the agent because the kid won't take a team-friendly deal? That's not right. That's not right. And so those are the numbers. That's how it worked out. So there you go. I had to get off my chest. Get back to your phones right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blood force trauma
to run him right down their throat.
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Malcolm, when you first sat down, I did this because I just have to do this. It's what I do. I Googled Malcolm Butler's salary because I thought you were on your entry-level contract, which is, good money, but... Chris Sims, who we're going to talk to in a minute, just said you're a top five corner in the league. The top five corners in the league make about $16 million a year. That's what Revis makes. That's what Sherman makes. He's in the $14-15 million a year range. Pat Peterson, Joe Hayden, those guys are around $14-15, $16 million a year. You next year are slated to make $510,000. And then you're under contract. No, I'm sorry. Next year you're under contract for $600,000. You have a little bit of a raise, $600,000. How do you feel about that?
No matter what I make, I'm going to go out there and play how I play, either way it goes. But, I have no control over that. Just doing my job, just doing everything to keep my job. And whatever happens, happens. Whatever falls in place, So.
Have you started to talk to the team about an extension?
Right.
No, sir, I haven't.
Are you interested? What do you mean you haven't? Have your agents?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well then let me be your agent, because that I think that's a pretty obvious one that I would give I would make a call to the team and say, maybe we can work on this.
I mean, do what you got to do. Do what you got to do. I can't control it, man.
Whatever your agent gets, I'll take half. I'll take half of that. Just give me a heads up.
I'd have taken 2.5% of $61 million.
So we've been serving his agent for a while, but. Again, I almost always root for the player against the team, especially in that league. And then especially when I hear the agent getting hammered for, at the time, what felt like no good reason. Because Malcolm Butler wouldn't take a team-friendly deal, the agent is an idiot. Oh, I hate that. I hate that line of commentary. I just wanted to give you the numbers that actually ended up happening, what the real numbers of what Malcolm Butler got and what he would have gotten with the Patriots. And what he got with Tennessee blows it out of the water. He was smart not to take those offers. The agent did not do him a disservice. The agent... did a good job for him.
I mean, when you weigh it all out, like, it's, you got to give Butler credit on this, Butler and his agent, because you're talking about an undrafted guy that was offered a good chunk of change in the real world. $6 or $7 million a year, that's life-altering money for a guy like that over a number of years. So let's say it's closer to $21 million, as you said, over the first 3 years. That's good money. And he said no. He didn't take the cheese. He said no. And he waited it out, and he got 29 after a bad year, and after the coach benched him in the Super Bowl. What if he had played well, and had a good Super Bowl? He might have gotten $15 million a year.
That's correct.
He might have gotten a Gilmore contract or better.
So he still blew it out of the water, and he didn't do himself any favors with the way that he played. So anyway, there's that. There's the final score on that. Back to your calls, as promised. Ron in Worcester is waiting to talk Bruins. Go ahead, Ron. What do you got?
Yeah, hi, Mike. As usual, I got to talk to you about Brad Marchand.
Go ahead.
What is your bias toward this guy? It's terrible. You and him have a lot of similarities. You make a living embellishing all kinds of sports talk. And you know something? It hasn't hurt your ratings one bit. You had to make a public apology a few months back. And you know something? I actually defended you because I think the PC police took it totally out of context. But the point is a rule a rule or not?
I just think... Yeah, it is, Ron. They should have made the call. So I'm not telling you that they shouldn't have. But,
but because of karma and reputation, you continue to demean the guy who's probably close to a superstar right now. Did you see the one he roofed into the net?
Oh, brilliant.
Absolutely sick, right?
He's nasty, Ron. He's tremendous.
The point I'm trying to make is you make this deal for flopping and embellishing and so on and so forth. Did you hear Brad? Did you catch Brad Marchand's lips when he was talking to the ref saying he was a coward? You notice the ref didn't give him a misconduct for it.
Yeah, you're right, he didn't. But still, to me, Ron, when the guys that flop and fake don't get the call, I don't shed a tear.
No,
I
understand you don't, but that's strictly an opinion, but that doesn't make it right.
Fair enough.
If that call was made in the Super Bowl and that minion next to you, okay, who agrees with everything you say, Murray is the only rational one there.
Okay, so Maz comes out of – I don't agree with Maz on why he didn't want it called.
It's okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, let the guy go. It's fine. He can say whatever he wants. It's not a big deal. I told you, I don't want the call made on anybody. I don't care whether it's Marchand, Sidney Crosby, Patrice Bergeron. I don't want that call made in the 3-on-3 overtime. Now, I will admit, might be easier for me to say that, given that in the grand scheme of things, this game didn't mean anything. It really didn't. The Bruins don't need the point. They're going to end up second or third. In all probability, they're going to play Toronto. That's the end of it. If they were fighting for a playoff spot and they needed the point, I might be pissed. Okay? So that said. And the Marchand flopping thing doesn't bother me like it bothers you. But he's a flopper. You are a verbal flopper, according to what that guy
but
said.
But it's a fair point.
Refresh me again. What are the penalties you actually do want called in 3-on-3?
Nothing.
No, not even icing? You know, nothing?
No. Well, that's not a penalty. I said offside and icing. That's the only reason I want the officials on the ice in the 3-on-3. That's it. The rest of it, I don't want to hear you. Unless if someone flips the puck in the crowd out of their own zone, you don't have a choice. That's automatic. Or, a slash and you break a stick, fine. But that call, no. I want to see you play it out in the 3-on-3. Someone's going to score a legit goal to win.
So you want video game overtime?
Pretty much.
Yeah, turn off the officials, turn off the officiating. We don't want anything. We don't want rules. Hell, even if someone pulls a Marty McSorley on Donald Brashear, don't call that either.
Okay,
right?
Again, excessive. Someone's health is in jeopardy there, so I'm not going down that road, Murray. But I'm telling you, that last night, that's a penalty.
That's it. Okay, all right. That's all I needed to hear.
There's no two ways about it.
Blow the whistle.
But I'm glad they didn't call it. I'm glad they didn't call. I want to see someone score in overtime to win the game. That's what I want to see.
I'm okay with them not calling for a different reason. Karma. Exactly. Tony in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Tony.
You're a verbal flopper.
Yes. Embellisher. Go, Tony. What do you got?
Hey, Tony, you're not a minion.
Don't worry about it, Tony. It's okay.
Hey, the best thing about this Bruins edition, they can win any style. 2-1, 7-5, 4-2, it doesn't matter. And we haven't been able to say that in a long time. So, I give them a shot, and hopefully don't have to watch the Red Sox until about mid-June. So the show. Thank you.
Okay, Tony. They've certainly proved that in the regular season. No question about it. They can win any style. Absolutely. If it's a low-scoring goalie duel in the playoffs, how do you like your chances?
No, I don't. Because I'll tell you what. I think I question the Bruins' ability to score like they have in the postseason. So that worries me a little. Because I think that when it comes down to really buckling down, other teams are going to be able to take away some of the scoring from the Bruins. I don't know if they can do the same. This is part of the reason why Toronto scares me. Toronto's got young, I mean, not just young, they got a boatload of fast forwards, young and old. I mean, they can fly. And I just think they're a bad matchup for the Bruins in that way. So that's what scares me about Toronto. That Toronto team was easy to like last year. And I think that, that defensively they're vulnerable, so maybe the Bruins can win a shootout there. But I think that's going to be a hard series.
Here's Carlton in Tampa. What do you got for us today, Carlton?
Oh, how we love to recreate history. Why don't you guys pull some of your clips from last March and April on you guys talking about Malcolm Butler's agent? Because I remember it looked like it was yesterday. And it wasn't only talking about his agent. The Boston sports media was smearing Malcolm Butler in the press, talking about all
don't include me
Boston
with don't
deals.
Include me with that, Carlton. I'm not going to let you do that because that is just so. I've been Malcolm Butler's biggest cheerleader to the point where I was wrong about him. I overrated him, but I was. You just heard that clip at the Super Bowl, Carlton. What do you don't make up stuff like that, Carlton? I did not do that to Malcolm Butler or his agent last year. You know I didn't.
You did to his agent, not to Malcolm Butler, but Reese was doing it to Malcolm Butler.
Well, this is what I'm talking about. Don't blame me for that. I think that's why I today set the record straight on what actually happened with the contract, because I think his agent deserved it. His agent was treated unfairly last year. But that wasn't by me.
But there wasn't anybody defending his agent other than yours
me.
Truly.
Other than me and you, Carlton, we were doing it together. Go.
All right. Well, Anyway, obviously, you know, it worked out okay, although the, you know, the Boston media again tried to smear Malcolm Butler after the Super Bowl thing, you know, with altercations with coaches and weed use and late for me. You know, it's just nauseating what the Boston sports media does at the behest of the New England Patriots. But the issue I want to talk about today is Chopra is doing the, you know, the dog and pony show on FS1 this morning on Undisputed, and then this afternoon on Colin Cowherd's show. And the most enlightening things that he said was that Giselle's comment about Tom feeling unappreciated was actually 5 days after the Super Bowl. And so, you know, this is the rift between Belichick and Brady is real. And Chopra is saying he thinks Brady, even though physically he can go 4 or 5 more years, mentally he's saying it's year to year from here on in. And he doesn't think he's going to go all that long into the future. And so this thing's going to come to an end pretty quick.
Okay, let's see. This is true. Chopra has been saying that. He doesn't think Brady makes it to 45 or whatever, and he's done a round of interviews, but he's been pessimistic about Tom Brady being at it for a long time. But I'll put it to, you know, in summary, we'll get you some sound or look at the interviews ourselves. But in summary, Chopra's been saying after doing that documentary, and especially the last episode, he does not know if Brady's in it for the long haul.
I mean, maybe this year killed his spirit a little.
Which is tough. I don't care about your spirit. I don't care about your spirit. I'll say it again. I don't care about your kid's youth hockey game. You can't make them trade the other guy and then retire.
Can you imagine if he pulls that? Can you imagine if he bails like at the end of next season? Oh my God! I was pissed already that they traded Garoppolo.
You owe him 3, Brady. You owe him at least 3. You were telling him to 45, which fine. I won't make you do that. But if you tell him 45 and they trade the other guy, you at least got to go to 43, and you got to be all in. You can't Brett Favre it. We're going to be on your lawnmower half the time. No. You go to practice instead of the youth hockey game. You go to the off-season conditioning program instead of the carnival. You do the same things you've been doing. Full TB12 method, Tom. The whole 9 yards. The whole 10 yards. All of it.
I mean, if a year from now we are talking about Tom Brady's retirement, that is one of the great
pork jobs of all time.
Dink moves of all time. Dinkus of the decade. Right there, Tom Brady, if he pulls that.
Felger and Mazz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mazz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Mike in Fort Lauderdale on the beats. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Good. Got my message here directly towards Moron Maserati. Moron Maserati, I tell you, hockey is a game with rules, okay? You call the rules no matter what. And it's not to entertain you for your particular entertainment, not to break up. It's about winning, losing with rules. That's why you have officials that paid on the ice to call the penalty. And to say the points don't matter, the points matter. Because if the Bruins want to avoid Toronto,
let me ask you something.
Hey, do that.
So, Mike, let me stop you. Let me stop you. Mike, good Bruins fan. Do you think it's really important for the Bruins to play Carolina? Can I just say one thing? Because no one knows what I'm talking about, Mike. Is it important for the Bruins to avoid Toronto and get a team like New Jersey, Carolina, or Philly? You think that's important for them?
Absolutely. Frederick Anderson has been phenomenal throughout his entire career since the Anaheim Ducks against the Boston Bruins with a 1-point-something goals against average. He's lost to the Bruins only once since he came to Toronto. Toronto is high, fast-paced. You know, if you have to play him, you have to play him. But if you can avoid them and the opportunity is there to avoid them, you have 2 head-to-head games with Tampa Bay.
So, Mike, let me tell you what, Mike. Do you think the Bruins have a legit chance at the Cup?
I sure as good as anybody in the entire
National. Okay, if they have a real chance at the Stanley Cup, you can't be afraid of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm sorry. You're going to have to be able to beat Toronto and teams better than them if you're going to win the Cup. So, you see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, if you're a borderline playoff team and you need everything to fall your way, if that's what you think the Bruins are, then yes, you got to start playing around with the matchups. If you think they're a Stanley Cup team, a legit Stanley Cup team, you've got to beat Toronto. And if you're worried about Toronto, then believe me, you got much bigger things to worry about after Toronto, like Tampa, like Washington, who you can't beat, like, I don't know, the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh, and now we're not even out of the conference. So if you think you are the odds-on favorite to win the Cup, then you shouldn't worry about Toronto.
Do you think it's a better matchup for them to play someone in the other division?
I do.
So do I.
And now, see, I think they're not this surefire Cup team. I'm not as confident in their chances as everybody else, so I do want the matchup. But to the point where, I mean, like, for example, I'm not rushing guys back from injury.
So, no. You got to get everybody right.
Right? So, like, if Char
is, you got to get everybody right.
If Char is borderline, I'm still sitting him until he's 1,000% healthy. I'm not bringing him back early so I can play Columbus versus Toronto. No. You know, the first thing is health there.
I mean, Toronto's beaten him 3 out of 4 during the year, right? They beat him 3 out of 4. Now, the first two of them were early. So the Bruins are sort of a different team then. You know, the last
totally.
One. Yeah, the last one up there was a tight game. The other one, the Bruins pretty much shut him down. I think they won it 4-1. So look, you know, I mean, he raises a good point. Maybe the point does matter. I told you, I love the 3-on-3. And the other thing is, Moron Maserati is redundant. Okay? That's understood.
Brandon in Maine. Hi, Brandon.
Yeah, hi, Felger. I wanted you guys to clarify the restricted free agent number that you included with Malcolm Butler. It sounds to me like if the Patriots had signed Malcolm to the $7 or $8 million figure.
So where'd you go with 8? How'd it get to 8 all of a sudden? It was between 6 and 7.
I don't know. We don't know the number.
Well, but we're going off the Jeff Howe report. So if you're just going to make up numbers now, then we can't have the conversation. We have to go on what's reported.
I'm just saying you can't include the 3-9 figure.
Yes, right? You can. You have to include the 3-9 number.
Year.
Brandon, entering the 2017 season, Malcolm Butler had a chance to take a $7 million a year offer from the Patriots or sit there on the 3-9 tender and then go to free agency the next year or risk a franchise tag or whatever happens. He did not take the team deal. He played under the restricted tag 3-9 and now just signed a deal for the next 2 years that'll pay him 25. That equals 29. The Patriots, reportedly, according to Jeff Howe, if you can come with another report, I'll listen to it. But according to Jeff Howe, we're offering 21 or 7 a year. So what's the gray area? How do you not include the 3-9?
Brandon, buddy, let me save you now, pal. You're wrong. You're wrong. I mean, I, and again, I'm not trying to dump on you. But
Jeff Howe's done some great reporting on Malcolm Butler. So, and he got the Malcolm Butler exclusive there after the year, which tells me he's been tapped into this thing. You know, and believe me, I think Jeff Howe's gotten a lot of things wrong. But on the Butler thing, in terms of the contract, he's sort of been on it.
No. Listen,
he reported this last year that the team offered a deal between 6 and 7 a year in the 2016 season during 2016, which means it really starts in 2017. I know maybe he would have gotten some upfront money right there, right then and there when he signs. But the first 3 years of the deal are considered 17, 18, 19.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, even if it didn't begin until 17.
Right, exactly.
He still makes more with Tennessee.
Exactly. Even if you want to say he was 4 times 7 versus 3 times 7. That was 28. He just signed for 29.
Yeah, the whole incentive for the Patriots to go to him early is to say you'll make it now, but you got to give us something back too. That's the whole point, but you make it now. Instead of making 3-9 in 2017, you'll make 7. Okay, and with a bonus or whatever, maybe you get some extra cash out of it too. So that's the whole point. He said, no, I'll take the short-term hit now, and then I'll go to the market. He chose free agency. He wanted to get to the market, and he was right.
Here's the bottom line. The team asked him to take a team-friendly deal. The agent said no. The agent got hammered as being an idiot and inexperienced by the local guys. And it turns out Malcolm Butler did just fine. He got his money. More than he would have gotten with the Patriots. That's just the final analysis. And I think the final analysis deserves to be told after the hammering that agent got last year. I didn't think that was fair. And the final numbers are in, and he won. Long commercial-free segment is next, in which the NFL's changing a rule that has killed us all and had us all pulling our hair out for years. They're changing it. We'll give you those changes and get your reaction to how you feel about it. Again, right after this, and a giveaway. Free wrestling tickets are yours as well within a matter of minutes.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Pass into the end zone, and it is Corey Clement. Yes! Touchdown!
Straight down the field. That's Marquise Flowers, a 4-5 sprinter out there on him.
Take a look here. Starts to lose control, and then that left foot is clearly out of bounds. But did he get the left foot down first with control? Takes it through the ground. Ball begins to wobble a bit.
The previous play will be reviewed.
Can you say definitively this last step? That's out.
It's out, definitely. Under review.
After review. The ruling on the field stands.
I'm stunned.
Yeah, we looked at that. It looks like it can go either way. He begins to lose control, but he's got to get that left foot down there. They contend that he has control here, pins it with his arm, starts to come out. Clearly, the left foot, the second time it came down, was out of bounds.
I give up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know.
I give up. I'm not loosening his arms when that last foot came down. I give up.
Chris Collinsworth said famous in the Super Bowl, he gives up. Gives up trying to figure it out.
I love that comment when he said it, because to me that shouldn't have been a touchdown based on the letter of the law.
And based on the way they've been calling it all year.
Exactly.
I mean, really, more of that. I mean, based on the way that thing had come back for a couple years. But yet in the Super Bowl, there seemed to be a different standard. And there was, because Roger Goodell started talking about...
It's like they changed the rules in real time during that game.
They kind of did.
Which, do I say good?
They kind of did. But the one thing I will reject is that the Patriots ended up getting screwed by it. But it's not like they set out to screw the Patriots. In other words, if the Patriots, if that wasn't Clement, if that was James White, you would have gotten the same consideration.
Correct.
It was that they were just changing the way they were looking at calling the play. It just so happened that the Eagles had one involving that. You did not.
Yeah, good luck convincing a certain segment of Patriots fans of that, though.
I can't. I'm not responsible for the crybaby, you know.
I mean, this to me goes back to like the Jesse James play. That play should be a touchdown.
Well, it will be. According to Mark Maskey of the Washington Post, who talked to James Vincent, who, again, the Patriots crybaby fan will know from his role in Deflategate, Troy Vincent, the NFL's executive vice president of football operations. He spoke to Vincent, and the NFL is about to have a new catch rule. The league's rulemaking competition committee is poised to change the controversial rule by eliminating two provisions that were particularly confounding over the years to players, coaches, and fans, and by modifying the standard by which catch or no catch rulings are made on instant replay reviews. Vincent said that committee members plan to propose getting rid of portions of the rule related to a receiver going to the ground while making a catch and to slight movement of the football while it's in the receiver's hands. The committee also intends to raise the bar by which on-field rulings of catches will be overturned via video replay, he said. Slight movement of the ball, it looks like we'll reverse that, Vincent said Tuesday. And when he says that, I think he means we'll reverse the way we've been calling it.
Right, exactly.
He's saying we're going to reverse every time there's a... He says we will now allow slight movement of the ball.
Right, so ask the next question because I know what you're going to ask, but go ahead.
Anyway, slight movement of the ball looks like we'll reverse that, Vincent said. Going to the ground, it looks like that's going to be eliminated as well. And we'll go back to the old replay standard of reverse the call on the field only when it's indisputable. The new catch rule, Vincent said, will require only that a receiver have control of the football, and any slight movement of the football in the receiver's hands detected via replay review would not result in an incompletion. So, that Clement play we just played? Stands.
Right, touchdown.
Stands. It stands. Any slight movement of the ball detected via replay review would not result in an incompletion. So that's exactly... It only took replay to see the slight movement of the ball. So Vincent is saying that play would have stood, and that play stands under the new rules. He also says the new rule will eliminate the requirement that a receiver who is in process of going to the ground while making a catch must maintain control of the football while on the turf to be awarded as a legal catch. And again, the replay standard for overturning any on-field ruling of a catch will be indisputable. The word indisputable rather than their previous standard of clear and obvious. Can I go first with our thoughts?
Sure.
Disaster waiting to happen. Disaster.
Of course it is.
Disaster.
Yeah.
Disaster.
But isn't it a disaster already?
No. I think it's a disaster because people don't get it, and people don't like it.
People are stupid.
And the refs are kind of stupid sometimes. And I think the way they changed it up there right for the last game was confusing to people as well. Like, all of a sudden, that Clement thing's a catch. It wasn't all year. So, like, I'm not telling you the NFL's done everything right. I'm telling you the rule, the way it's written, I get it. Like, when people say, I don't know what a catch is anymore, I do. And so do you. You have to catch it and maintain control of the ball, basically, until you're back on the bench sitting next to the Gatorade bucket. I mean, that's basically what it is. You have to catch it, 2 feet, football move, maintain possession, when you go to the ground, when you get up, like the whole thing. You got
It's understandable when you look at it in the minutia of, it's broken down via replay, but common sense in real time, with most people. No one knows what the hell a catch is.
Because you don't, yes you do. You know how they rule it.
Yeah, and I think it's so stupid.
Well, that's different then. If you think the rule's stupid, that's different than saying you don't know what a catch is.
No, I know what it is. It's just stupid.
Okay, thank you. See, that's why when people say they don't know what a catch is, I know exactly what a catch is under the current rules, and that's why I like it.
Right. So when I say that people are stupid, my point is that's never going to change. People are always going to be stupid. So I'm just telling you that I think people looked at the Jesse James play, and I'm, you know, honestly, I think it really comes down to that play. To me, this is now the Jesse James rule. Like, I think people saw that play and said, that's a touchdown.
So he said that they specifically started with plays that happened during the year and then worked their way backwards to write the language to make those legal plays. He says the Dez Bryant catch, that's a catch now. The Jesse James play, that'd be a catch. He also mentions the Kelvin Benjamin catch, the Bills at the Patriots in that late season game at Foxborough, that would be a catch.
Good.
So again, the Patriots may have gotten the wrong side of it on that Clement play. You want to add them up throughout the course of the year, you got the benefit of most of those. You know, Jesse James was ruled to be not a catch, but Brandon Cooks in that early season game against Houston at home, when he hits out of bounds, the ball moves. They kept that a touchdown, but the Jesse James won away. So, like, you benefited from during the regular season, no question. But, see, I don't like that. I think you should have to survive the ground.
Did you like the Super Bowl?
The game?
Yeah.
I thought it was a good game.
Because I think what this is that Super Bowl 52 provided the template for what this is going to be going forward. And I think they changed those rules in real time. You had 7 penalties that were just small penalties in that game. Nothing like this. They didn't look at that Corey Clement touchdown and get into the minutia of it and say, oh, well, it moved, and let's look at this, and I guess it's not a catch based on how we've been calling it. No, it looked like a catch. We're going to call it a catch. Good. And if you found that game entertaining, I think that they gathered all those refs and the competition committee after it and said, make them all like that.
But I'll tell you what, Goodell said it even before the game.
Right.
That's the point. That they, even before that game started, they knew then.
But after it played out the way that it did, I think that they said, all right, we have our template. Use it like this. Make all the games like this.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I like to survive the ground rule. I do.
Well, you like the absolute clarity of it.
I do. And okay. And I think that I like the catches that are... You have to complete it all the way through the process. Again, the Butch Johnson touchdown catch against the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl 8 or whatever that was, an old clip I keep showing you, to me is a perfect example. I don't want that to be a catch. 2 feet, hit the ground, maintain control, don't be stupid, don't be loose with the ball, and then it's a catch. I sort of like the rule the way it's written.
Okay, so but the Jesse James play, I want that to be a touchdown.
I don't.
See, I do. Because I think that one's stupid. Like, did he lose control of that ball?
Yeah.
No, not really. And I'd be willing to bet that any spectacular catch at UC where a guy hits the ground, the ball moves a little. And so this is the problem now, that you have high def, and you can see even the slightest spin of the ball.
This is what I don't get either, is because they let the ball move before. They said, as long as you maintain control, it doesn't matter if the ball moves a little bit. Back to the Brandon Cooks touchdown against the Texans. The ball moved a little bit, but he maintained control. I like that rule, too, and that was clear to me.
Did Corey Clement maintain control?
I think he did.
See, I think so, too, but by the letter of the law, that should not have been a touchdown.
Well, by the way they've been calling it, you know, I think their definition of what control was, it kept sliding, you know.
I see what you're saying.
Too far out of, well, if it moves a little bit, he doesn't have control. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, so then I'll tell you this. I didn't like the way they were calling it. The Corey Clement play should be a touchdown, too.
Okay, so but so that's one thing. We're talking about going to the ground and whether you should do the ball moving or not. But the one that's really is going to totally blow people away is that the new replay standard is now it has to be indisputable versus clear and obvious.
What's the difference?
Can someone explain to me the difference there?
I don't know. And the other one is, where I thought you were going to go is, when I hear slight movement is allowed, what constitutes slight movement?
Exactly. So was the Clement thing slight movement, or was that pretty significant movement as he was playing with it down by his hip? Like, I can't tell that on paper. And the thing about... We're only going to overturn them now if it's indisputable. Versus in the past, it had to be clear and obvious. That's really not much of a difference.
Like, I would say they're synonyms.
They're going to be more gray area. More gray area. So what I'm saying is, this is my bottom line. Previously, people would say, I don't know what a catch is, and I don't think that's accurate. You knew, you just didn't like it. Now you're not going to know what a catch is. Now you'll be able to say that. Because one guy's version of indisputable and clear and obvious is going to be totally different from the next guy's. And what does movement versus control mean? It's about to get worse.
So, but there is a silver lining here, just quickly.
There'll be more catches.
You hate how replay has infected the game.
Yes.
Okay, I think this is the first sign of a league looking at it and saying, too much replay. I mean, the replay is so precise now and so clear that you can see the ball move an eighth of a turn in a guy's hands. An eighth of a turn. Is that a loss of control? Should that not be a touchdown now?
Let's see how it plays out. My prediction? It'd be more uncertainty, not less.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.